It was quiet, calm, and familiar. Not like Adonis, who I felt I'd never met before, but familiar as if I had been here before, as if I should know this place. "Hello?" I called. No one answered. I started up the stairs to the part of the house beckoning me to it with bright, cheerful light. 3 bedrooms, a study and bathroom. Thus far, everything about this place screamed ordinary. The door to 1 bedroom was wide open, and I went to it. Stuffed animals and dolls were scattered on the floor. A television with a pink remote control was at one side, a twin bed with a purple canopy on the other. The dresses and furniture were bright white. The curtains overlooking the space behind the house, pink and green. Purple heart-shaped rugs were on the floor. I smiled, liking the bright, happy colors of the room. Beside the TV remote, in front of a blanket that appeared to have been wrapped around a small form before being pushed off, were a shoebox and a scrapbook. I knelt beside the scrapbook, curious to see the child who lived here. Flipping open the cover, I was surprised at the title page. The Oracle of Delphi. I turned the page. The scrapbook was filled with articles cut out of newspapers and printed from online sources about the current Oracle of Delphi. Pictures, news reports, tabloid covers. Nothing about the book was personal to its owner at all. "Someone's obsessed with the Oracle," I said, and closed it. The shoebox beside it was empty, and I stood, puzzled as to what I was supposed to do next. I started towards the door, wondering if I'd find more in the next room over, when I tripped over something hidden in the blanket at my feet. "Hey, I know you." I bent and retrieved the stuffed koala bear I'd first seen with Adonis. It appeared almost new, and it was rumbling. My fingertips vibrated with the strange sensation. "Some kind of talking toy?"
"Mrs. Nettles."
The voice from Adonis's bedroom. "You're not talking to me, are you?" I asked, holding it away from my body.
"Mrs. Nettles."
I dropped it, then gasped. "Oh, gods, I'm so sorry." I picked it up and gazed at it. "Are you hurt?" My face turned hot at the idea of talking to a toy. The stuffed animal blinked. It blinked. This time when I dropped it, I leapt back. The flying horse chicken was a little weird, but this... The koala climbed to its feet. I had the sudden flashback to a horror movie I once watched where a doll came to life and slaughtered people.
"Namazuni sent Mrs. Nettles to guide you."
"What does that mean?" I demanded of the quiet world around me. "What is a Mrs. Nettles?" The koala pointed to itself, then began to stroke one of its ears. You're Mrs. Nettles." It nodded. "Oh. If this world weren't surreal, I might short out." I decided to accept a walking, talking teddy bear as I did the wall. "Okay, Mrs. Nettles. I'm trying to figure out what Namazuni wants me to do here." Mrs. Nettles extended her arm in my general direction. "I'm not sure what that means." It did it again. Not getting whatever she wanted me to know, I knelt and cautiously drew nearer to her. "Do you know Adonis?" Mrs. Nettles nodded and waddled towards me. She paused at my knees and then shifted forward to try to grasp the red cord around my wrist between her 2 chubby paws.
You want me to take it off?"
It nodded. "You know what happens if I do." Another nod.
"I'm in some weird world where toys can talk. Why not?"
I tugged the red cord off and braced myself to hear the shattering of glass. Immediately, the world around me erupted into activity and color. Thin, shifting ribbons twisted and twirled around every single object in the room. I'd seen them before,
and I racked my brain to figure out where.
The lake.
In the water. I had witnessed smoky, faded ribbons like these twisting in the depths.
What are they?
I asked, stunned by the life in the room filled with inanimate objects. The toys on the bed had two ribbons each, one blue and one yellow, though the exact hue and widths were unique around each toy. Mrs. Nettles, however, had three, blue, yellow, and faded green. Mrs. Nettles had no answer. Mesmerized by the colors and movement, I let my gaze roam over everything in the room. Even the television had two ribbons. I looked up towards the ceiling to see if I had any floating above my head. If I did, they were invisible. Rustling came from the direction of the window. I blinked out of my amazed stupor to find Mrs. Nettles had moved. She was beneath the window, staring up at it, unable to reach the pane or see out of it.
"Don't tell me you fly," I said with a half laugh and rose. I crossed to the window and froze.
The nothingness had retreated. The house had a backyard, complete with a picket fence, treehouse, and a sandbox. Toys were scattered across the yard, and if I leaned out the window, I'd see a small herb garden beneath the kitchen window. Next to a... How do I know that?
I didn't recall ever seeing Mrs. Nettles or the house or the backyard before. Why was I certain of the herb garden?
I was starting to remember.
Mrs. Nettles? Can you find him?
I whirled. A little girl around the age of six bolted into the room, faded and transparent, a ghost in every aspect. She was trailed by the ghostly version of Mrs. Nettles. They searched for someone or something before she crossed to the dresser and opened the bottom drawer. She pulled out a brilliant blue-green gem that glowed unnaturally before she hurried out the door. My heart was starting to pound harder, and my instincts tingled. I touched the teal gem beneath my t-shirt and tugged it out. It was identical to the little girl's. My Mrs. Nettles was waddling towards the door. I followed her and reached the door in time to see the spectral girl race down the stairs. Sweeping Mrs. Nettles up, I hurried down the stairs, following her. She darted out the back door and towards the tree in the corner of the backyard. I watched her climb the ladder on the trunk to reach the treehouse, then disappear inside. The sounds of men shouting from behind us made me reach for my knife. I slunk through the house to the front door just as it burst open, and I was overrun by men in black uniforms. I cried out, startled, and stumbled back, slashing at the figures. But these were ghosts, like the girl. After the brief heart attack, I realized they couldn't see or hear me at all, and grew braver. I walked out front to see the world had grown once more. The house was one of many identical ones lining a street in the suburbs. The men originated from one of five black vans. Several were huddled around one van. I was about to go inside to see what happened to the little girl when I caught a flash of red in the moonlight. I'd recognize Heracles' hair and size anywhere. I started towards him, wondering if he could see me. My steps slowed as I waded through the spectral figures around him. This Heracles I'd only seen in old pictures. Gorgeous, handsome, bearing none of the scars he did now, Heracles was 23 at the peak of his physical shape, dressed in black fatigues like the other men, and issuing orders from the iPad in his hands.
"No parents," someone cried from the door of the house. "They're already dead," Heracles said without looking up. "Saw to it yesterday after they revealed her location."
My breath caught. This isn't my Heracles. I'd never heard that tone or seen that expression on his face. I didn't like either. My Heracles was a gentle athlete, not this.
"We've got her. She's trapped in her treehouse, a soldier said, hurrying towards them. This way.
Thank the gods. I'll be glad to get this over with, Heracles said.
Quite a change from being the people's champion, another man said beside him.
Yeah, Master's orders.
Master? I didn't want to see what happened next. My Heracles didn't deserve to have his honor and goodness besmirched by this bizarre place. As far as I knew, he never had a master. Unless he was talking about the benefactor who sponsored him at the Olympics.
What in Olympus is that? Someone gasped.
They all looked up, and I did as well. A creature I never knew existed before last week soared overhead, its gray body blending in with the partially cloudy sky. Eyes glowed teal, and he passed with the threat, silence, and intensity of a thunderhead. Grotesque. My heart quickened once more. The creature was headed towards the backyard. I watched it, unable to explain how my whole body seemed to come alive when I saw him. My heartbeat turned erratic, and blood roared in my ears almost too loudly for me to hear. I was fevered, thrilled, yet scared, curious and dreading all at once. I raced through the house to the backyard, wishing I could warn the little girl that was coming, and stopped cold. The grotesque was tearing into Heracles' men. His tail, fangs, and claws shredded anyone that came near. I watched, somewhat disgusted, and uncertain whose side anyone was on. His agility, his feline speed and strength were somehow familiar. The four men were soon in pieces, torn limb from limb. The grotesque straightened and looked around, tail tapping the tree before he lifted into the air effortlessly. He went to the opening of the treehouse, and my breath caught. I hurried forward instinctively. Don't hurt her, I cried at the ghost that couldn't see me. To my surprise, the girl emerged cautiously from the house and smiled at the grotesque. It wrapped her in one arm and picked up Mrs. Nettles as well. She laughed as the creature lifted her into the air over her house. The monster wobbled in midair, as if unaccustomed to carrying others. Heracles and two others raced around the side of the house. The men with him fired their weapons at the grotesque, which hovered closer to the rooftop. If he were hit by a bullet, he didn't show it. We need something bigger, one of the attackers called. The grotesque began to rise straight up into the sky. I got this. Without any sign of strain at all, Heracles wrenched a picket free from the fence, positioned himself as if throwing a javelin, and launched it straight up. Even I doubted he'd get anywhere close to the grotesque flying 20 meters over the house. But he did. The picket pierced one wing and pinned it to the side of the monster, running all the way through him to stick out of his other side. A roar shook the windows of the house, and suddenly, the creature and girl were falling. No, I whispered, horrified. The girl came free from the monster's arms as they tumbled out of the sky, screaming as she did. One of the men cursed, but Heracles trotted a short distance, spread his legs wide, and held out his arms. Falling, and Heracles caught me. I shook my head, suddenly dizzy, suddenly able to feel the air rushing through my hair as I fell once more. Down from the night sky. Down from the arms of the creature trying to rescue me. Down into Heracles' arms. I dropped to my knees, struggling to right myself. Mrs. Nettles tugged free and waddled away. Blinking, I forced my mind to focus here and now, and not on the dream. Heracles had the girl. The grotesque smashed through the roof and then crashed through the first and second floors, sounding as if he landed on and crushed the kitchen table. It's okay. Heracles' voice was gruff. The other men were panicking, one calling for an ambulance while another barked for someone to bring a first aid kit. I climbed to my feet and approached, fearfully watching Heracles and the girl. She was shaking and scared, staring not at Heracles but into the air above his head.
Is your name Alessandra? He asked.
My heart dropped to my feet.
The girl nodded. My name is Heracles.
Bad people, she whispered.
Not bad. You're special, and we've been trying to find you.
You're hurt.
She was staring at the air above him.
Broken.
Heracles' breath caught audibly. What did you say?
The ribbons. They're broken.
I blinked. I'd done my best to cancel out the ribbons around everything to concentrate on what I was watching. I saw what she meant. Heracles had four ribbons, but the colors were tie-dyed rather than solid. The edges jagged instead of smooth. They appeared to have been stitched together from other ribbons.
Frankenstein.
He referred to himself as such on occasion. I thought it was because of his size. I saw the truth now. The confused Franken ribbons unique to him.
I can fix them.
Baby Alessandra raised her hands and began to manipulate them, using her fingers to smooth and shift them. Heracles staggered and dropped to his knees, releasing her. She rolled free of him with a grunt and then sat up, appearing irritated to have been disturbed before she was finished. She continued to manipulate the ribbons until the edges smoothed out and the colors were uniform. Heracles contorted on the ground as she worked. When she was finished, he fell still, panting and sweating.
Now we have to save Mismatch, the girl said and stood.
Miss... what? Heracles struggled to lift his head.
My gargoyle.
She started towards the house. Stop, he called. You can't... it's dangerous. With some effort, Heracles pushed himself to his feet and staggered forward before regaining some part of his composure. What did you do to me?
The ribbons, she pointed.
Heracles passed a hand over his head, as if to see what was there, then brought his hand before his face. He stared at it before he looked down at his body. This isn't me. This isn't who I am.
Mismatch! Alessandra cried.
I circled Heracles. The coldness was gone from his features, and he appeared aware where he was mechanical before. He had been broken, or at least... not quite right, as little me said. I didn't understand the source of his Franken ribbons. Something terrible had happened to him. Perhaps in his youth, he refused to reveal to me. Heracles, the Supreme Magistrate is on the way. We need to get her to the house, someone called. His face skewed in response, and he glanced towards the girl making her way up the stairs. Heracles snatched her. She started to object. Quiet. The bad people are coming. We need to leave. He took her out the back gate and disappeared into the night. The scene faded. I was standing behind the house. The yard was gone, along with the men. Realizing how tightly my chest was clenched, I bent over and took several deep, steadying breaths. I was slow sometimes, but even I understood what I'd seen. Me. Heracles. The forgotten events of the night that changed my life. But was it real? Yes. I felt it just like I felt the gem at my chest belonged to me, like my grotesque had belonged to me. Heracles killed my parents. He was going to turn me over to the people he hated most in the world. My protector, like everyone else in my life, wasn't who I thought he was. I ached inside. The man I never thought could disappoint me had turned out not to exist.
Don't freak out, Lissa,
I whispered, sucking in air. Aurora was lining the horizon. With no concept of how time worked here, I forced myself to straighten. Mrs. Nettles was standing in the doorway.
So were you...
mine? I asked as I approached, straining to control the emotions. She nodded.
Mrs. Nettles.
Turning, she pointed towards the kitchen. Not at all certain I was ready to see what happened next, I went. The grotesque lay in the center, a pool of dark blood beneath him. The ghost Mrs. Nettles was tugging the picket out of his side. I felt bad for her, wanting to tell her no one could survive such a wound except... I had seen him. I knew he did. Somehow. 5 ribbons floated around him, one of which was green. The sun came up, albeit not as fast as it went down, and something even more incredible began to happen. The monster became human. Its change was silent. Wings melted away. The athletic, feline body turned from gray to olive-skinned. Dark hair grew on his head, and the talons withdrew into him. No, I breathed. It can't be. By daylight, the grotesque was Adonis. No, no, no. But similar to Heracles, he wasn't the Adonis I knew. He was younger, for one, in his teens. When he awoke, his expressions were open and aware instead of cold and withdrawn. His gorgeous eyes warm. He sobbed out of pain and spoke gently to Mrs. Nettles. Is no one who they seem to be? I whispered, stricken by the sight of anyone in pain. He tried to rescue me. He's yours, Mrs. Nettles' tiny voice said into my head. Mine. I didn't understand fully what that meant, or how this man was the same who slaughtered people right and left, who kidnapped Heracles, destroyed my forest, and was universally feared and hated by everyone. What changed? Why had he wanted to rescue me when I was a child, and turn me over to the sacred triumvirate now? Confusion was trumped only by helplessness at seeing him hurt. Whatever our past and present, I ached for him strongly enough that tears pricked my eyes, and I resisted the urge to weep. We were connected on a level I had no clue existed, but which made his pain real to me. I wiped my eyes. Dream. Memories. Not real. Mrs. Nettles pointed towards a door I guessed would lead to the garage if this were reality. In this version of things, my name was written on it, and I instinctively knew I wasn't going to find 2 cars behind it. I didn't want to leave, but she waddled in the direction. I trailed, this time apprehensive about what lay behind the door. She stopped before it and looked up at me. You want me to open it? I asked. A nod. A sense I wanted to ignore was creeping up on me. It was more than familiarity this time. It was the idea that Adonis was right. I basically knew nothing about anything, and had to acknowledge there was a piece of me that had been hidden from everyone for too long. I didn't know me either. And this scared me. Terrified to learn more about how Heracles wasn't the man I thought he was, I was likewise starting to tremble to think I was about to find out who I was. What if I were as bad as Heracles had been? What if my secrets were the worst? Who or what am I? Chapter 12. The High Priestess. If all men were just, there would be no need for valor. Agesilaus II. Failed miserably, I reported, and tossed my weapons onto the table beside one of the Silent Queen's gardeners.
Sometimes success takes a different shape than one expects. This was supposed to be a sphinx, and ended up a griffin. It's still beautiful, she replied, through the telepathic link we shared.
Mute since the age of 6, she spoke to no one but me, I glanced over at my mistress and the keeper of the bloodline, the stunning Queen of Greece. She perched on a bench beneath a shade tree, her crystal clear blue eyes on the gardener shaping one of the many fantastical bushes in the gardens. Ran into Nico. We're not the only ones pressing Adonis. He has absolutely no concern for the Oracle Discovery Protocol.
You need to make a decision about Nico, she reminded me.
With cool beauty, mild manners, and the large eyes of a doll, the Silent Queen was often mistaken for being simple, naive, weak. Such a person didn't request a high priestess to assassinate an ex-lover, among others. The cunning teen was brilliant and ruthless in the way of a royal fighting for her title. I had lost track of the people we'd seen to an early grave to protect our secrets from the other members of the Triumvirate. I know, I said. He's been a pain lately. We have a son together. Makes things complicated. If he were anyone else,
he'd be gone. I know.
The Silent Queen patted the seat beside her.
How are preparations going?
Perfect. Ready to take the next step when commanded.
And the Oracle? Do we strike or wait? What is your impression?
I dwelled on the question for a moment, trying to sort things out in my own head before responding. She's tough. Smart. Adonis was in a hurry to start her on his master's trials.
Adonis has never been an easy man to understand.
Not at all. But he was even harder than usual. He went out of his way not to hurt her when she tried to escape. The Adonis we know and loathe would have shot her in both legs to make it easier.
Perhaps he has orders from the Supreme Priest.
Maybe. I wasn't convinced. Anyway, I think if we can get her alone and present our side, we'll be able to sway her. She'd be an asset to our plans, and your trial for her would only hasten our ability to act.
As long as the cost isn't too high. We also risk discovery once we reveal our trial to her.
She seems honest, if naive. I think an honest person would side with us when she hears the alternative.
True. Where do you go next?
I glanced at my watch. Downstairs, I replied, referring to the secret city beneath DC. The military intercepted a train of supplies coming from outside the wall. I'm going to see the damage and check in with our friend.
Ask him about the Oracle.
That's a bit difficult without telling him the truth.
I trust your judgment.
Beautiful and powerful, the Queen was also the best boss in the world. I'll be back for your dinner. She bowed her head, and I stood. I was the only one who could hear her, which meant I was required to attend every official dinner, gala, and ceremony she did. I didn't bother changing clothes, but whirled a hooded cloak around my shoulders and collected my weapons. I entered her airy villa and trotted down to the wine cellar, past the thousands of bottles of wine, and to a secret passageway behind a wall. Moments later, I was descending in a small elevator into the secret city below DC. Always dark and drab, it teemed with activity and movement. Two-story buildings and city blocks had been established in the central hub of the city located beneath her villa. Leaping out of the elevator, I strode through several roads named after former Greek kings and queens. The scent of food and gun oil were in the musty air, and those I passed bowed their heads or greeted me with a smile. The armies living here consisted of mostly men wearing run-down clothing. Part of the duties for those present was to spy in D.C., and vagrants made for the least noticeable spies. Each of them wore a patch with an M on it when visiting underground. Dosia! Someone called as I entered the warehouse district where the supplies were kept.
You heard?
Gus, the man in charge of this district, was red-faced and fidgeting. He had a tic in one eye that was twitching faster than usual as a result of his agitation. Yeah, I said and approached him.
My gaze was caught by a shock of red hair and the towering frame of Heracles. He'd found a small gang of Mama's men doing reconnaissance and beat them all, until one finally agreed to take him to the leader of the underground world. The queen and I alone knew his importance and instantly welcomed him. What's he doing here? Heracles was walking with someone else among the weapons, not touching, just looking.
He knows his guns. He's helping with this week's inventory, said Gus.
Someone so close to Alessandra didn't need to be in the middle of my weapons depot, even if he didn't know yet what our plan with her was.
The men love him. He's been sparring with them. Tough.
Heracles!
I watched my son race out of the neighboring building towards the red-haired giant with the scarred features. Heracles whirled and pretended to fight with him before feigning injury and dropping to the ground. Thomas laughed.
Tommy loves him too, Gus added. Here's a list of what was seized.
My gaze lingered on Tommy, who lived below ground with the armies of Mama. I pursed my lips and took the iPad, skimming through the missing supplies. Figures it was the shipment with the missiles we need to penetrate the wall.
Those cost a fortune to pilfer from the military.
I studied the numbers. They're in their supply depot? Or seized assets warehouses?
Seized assets.
Damn, we haven't cracked entering that area yet. I handed back the report, gaze falling to Tommy again. Gripping my phone tightly, I debated not going down the road I was about to before I punched the number for Nico.
Whatever it is, no,
he said bluntly when he answered.
All right, then I won't bring Tommy by, I snapped.
Silence, and then,
you always demand something in return for me seeing my son.
What is it? He snapped tersely.
10 minutes alone with your computer. I knew he was cursing the day he met me. I was, too. We'd had something once, long ago, when I was too naive to see Nico for the selfish person he was. I rarely thought of those days anymore. But I did wish he was a better person for my son's sake.
Okay. After hours.
I checked the time. It'd be a squeeze to attend the dinner with the queen.
And I get him for the weekend.
Nico added. One day. Nico grumbled.
Fine. Friday.
He hung up. I lowered the phone, feeling dirty for being willing to use my son to manipulate someone else. But only one place in North America manufactured the Wallbuster missiles. And it had recently been smashed to pieces by angry gods. Even without this complication, the Silent Queen was running close to broke. She had spent the fortune her family built up over millennia to create the underground world and the armies it contained. The weapons were irreplaceable, and a vital part of our plan. I'll get them back, I said to Gus. Keep an extraction team ready.
Will do.
I moved away from him to Tommy. Heracles was back on his feet, talking Tommy through the parts of a machine gun he held. Hey, kid, I said, and ruffled Tommy's hair.
Give your mama a minute with the greatest Olympian alive.
Tommy smiled and raced away.
Good kid,
Heracles said. His scarred face held me in quiet curiosity for a moment, before I realized I was staring. It wasn't like me to be distracted by a man.
You have time to talk? I asked.
He nodded.
Any word on Alessandra?
I saw her today. She's doing great. We began walking, leaving the warehouse area for the streets of the underground city.
All this. You control the criminal underworld, too?
Heracles asked. Most of it. There are parts we haven't been able to wrangle into order, or we've purposely not touched. The arena is one. Too popular. Its sudden disappearance or change of leadership would draw the attention of too many high-level politicians who like to gamble.
Would be a good place for money laundering.
That's what we use it for.
Lissa would like you. Smart and strong.
I felt his gaze on me
and wasn't certain what to say in response.
About Lyssa, I started. What do you think she'll think when she sees what we built? What we plan?
I'm not really sure what you plan, except a rebellion against the gods.
Good place to start. Heracles was quiet briefly. She was raised to fight and to believe in the old ways. Assuming the old ways are part of what you're doing here, I imagine she'd be eager to join you once she discovers what her fate will be otherwise.
There were moments when I recalled the scarred man was more than he seemed. He'd been chosen by someone to take care of the next oracle. All I knew about him was that he vanished 12 years ago after winning 3 annual Olympic Games. To participate, he had to have had an incredibly wealthy benefactor, possibly a politician or a god whose honor and pride depended on Heracles winning. How much he knew, his connections with the elite, and who he might be working for, were not mysteries I could guess. They also weren't questions one simply asked. I didn't want him offended, or driven off, or otherwise outside our reach and control. Adonis had the right idea to trap him as a way of assuring the Oracle cooperated. I wasn't going to cage the man, but I was going to give him as many reasons as possible to stay under our influence.
You designed all this?
He swept a hand out towards the city.
A good chunk.
It's impressive. From him, the compliment was unexpected.
It's a privilege to know you think so.
The silence between us was charged. We continued walking, each in thought, and at least me overly aware of the 2 inches between our forearms. He was close to my age, with the body of someone who hadn't lost any part of the edge he held in the Olympics. The only thing I didn't understand about him? The scarring covering his face and neck. A combination of fire and knife, if I had to guess. And he'd never bothered to obtain surgery to fix it.
Dosia, I want to see Lyssa, he said quietly.
I understand.
And I did. For all intents and purposes, she was his daughter.
Adonis has started the trial the Supreme Priest dictated.
Which is?
Gods know, I replied. None of the Triumvirate members are willing to share. Heracles stopped and faced me.
She's not prepared.
She's very well prepared, I countered. I've seen her fight and spoken to her. She can take care of herself. His jaw ticked, his dark eyes on mine.
I would have liked to have spoken to her first, to warn her not to trust anyone.
I think she's figured that out. Heracles' expression didn't change. Whatever was on his mind, his gaze was troubled.
I'm sure she'll do well, I said. Yes, she will, he agreed. I fear more for the things she will learn that she might not be prepared for.
Such as?
The truth.
Concern fluttered through me.
Was it the kind of truth that would drive her away from our cause?
Sensing he wasn't about to discuss it, and not knowing him well enough, I didn't ask. I had 2 people digging into his past for more information about him. Whatever they turned up would give me more insight. Until then, I wanted to keep him content here in the underground city.
Are you comfortable here? Have everything you need? I asked.
Very. Thank you. I only worry for her. Her fate is out of my hands, and I can't yet fully accept that.
I didn't want to imagine what I'd feel if Tommy were at the mercy of the Triumvirate.
But Alessandra was tough. She didn't strike me as someone to wallow if she was knocked on her ass.
Let me know if you need anything, I said, and started away.
I would ask one favor, Heracles said.
Sure.
I'd like to be involved on some level with the operation you're planning.
I considered him. It's a very delicate political situation, Heracles. I don't have to tell you this.
You fear giving me too much knowledge or power.
We've built this underground city in the shadows. Should Alessandra not choose to support our cause, I risk much by granting you access now, only to have you side with someone else later.
Fair enough.
Training?
You have a lot of green troops I can help. It'll do me well to stay busy, too.
I think that'll work, I said with a nod. Report to Commander Zusen. He'll know where to put you.
And could I trouble you for information on Alessandra, whenever you have it?
I'd be happy to share. He smiled.
Thanks, Dozia.
Sadness was in his eyes, despite his calm manner and acceptance of his adopted daughter's absence. I started away, thoughts on how we were going to steal the missiles once I used Nika's computer to unlock the facility, and then paused. Heracles' suffering bothered me. Perhaps it was because I, too, had a child I'd never want to see go through Alessandra's fate. Artemis has kept watch over her this long, I told him, turning. I don't think she'll forsake Alessandra any time soon. But I'll say an extra prayer for her this evening at the temple. Heracles' crooked smile was warm.
Thank you.
Without responding, I strode off once more. I had enough to think about without allowing the sorrow of one man to weigh me down. Yet something about Heracles and his love for Alessandra made me want to pray harder than usual this all worked out the way we planned. Chapter 13. Alessandra.
Be still, my heart. Thou hast known worse than this. Homer.
My hand shook as I gripped the doorknob to the pseudo-garage. With one last look at the man in agony behind me, I stepped through the door. I was ready for the worst, for an abrupt, if not violent, reacquaintance to whom I was. Instead, I was in little Alessandra's bedroom once more. It was light outside, and a warm summer breeze swept through the bedroom and past the little girl seated in the center of her floor. The spectral figure was playing with Mrs. Nettles and several other dolls and toys she'd brought to life. Those that were alive had three ribbons, while those that were inanimate had two. Alessandra had a thick rainbow of greens, from the most brilliant yellow-green to teal to the darkest green moss. The room swirled with ribbons whose purpose and power I didn't understand. "Do you want to play?" she asked and looked up at me. I shook my head.
I wanted to leave.
Well, you should.
I've always been saucy.
A smile slid free. Sensing no danger, I sat down near her.
What's going on? I asked. Why am I here?
You're remembering.
I was afraid of that.
Is everything true? I looked around the room. It was feeling more like mine this time around, to the point I knew she kept the scrapbook about the oracle in the bottom drawer of her dresser.
Yes.
Even the part about Heracles and my parents?
Yes.
Her eyes were sad.
He loves you still.
The wisdom in her eyes was out of place for a 6-year-old, and I gradually began to suspect she was an image, like the rest of this place. A surreal delivery system to provide me with the truth I needed.
I love him.
The words were a tight whisper. I swallowed the knot in my throat. Thinking of him made me ache.
And Adonis? How can he hate me now? He doesn't remember who he is, but I've begun to remind him.
You're Nemosyne?
She nodded. Too weak to appear to you in person. The Holy Wars tax us all. I was forced to use your mind and your magic to create all this.
She waved around her before returning to the toys. She picked up Mrs. Nettles, then deftly grasped the green ribbons.
This is yours. Only you have it. Not even the gods can use it.
I accepted it. It had no weight whatsoever, and yet stuck in my hand.
What is it?
Oh. Mrs. Nettles went still,
became inanimate once more as I leaned back. When I leaned forward, she returned to life.
So that's what I do? Bring toys to life?
You can do many things. Each has a purpose.
She motioned to the other two ribbons.
You can change them.
She manipulated the ribbons floating around Mrs. Nettles. The stuffed animal faded until she was a ghost, then returned to normal, and then ended up with her feet where her hands should be, and her eyes on her butt.
I can manipulate matter.
I had never heard of anything so incredible.
This is what gods do, isn't it?
Namazini nodded and returned Mrs. Nettles to normal before bringing her back to life.
We control nature, time, space, and so do you. Initially, gods and goddesses learn to create and destroy. You have to train yourself to do other things.
Like what?
Premonitions, teleportation, telekinesis. There is no limitation to what you can do. You simply have to learn.
She handed me Mrs. Nettles.
When you bring something to life, it's yours. You are bound to it. You must protect it. You can never harm one of your creations.
These words were so solemn, I almost smiled at her cute, serious expression. I brought Adonis, the grotesque, to life, I mused. He's not the same man I saw in the kitchen.
You must help me remind him. I am too weak to do it myself.
I wasn't certain it mattered if I told the CISA chief who he was to me.
He had changed too much.
He didn't seem capable of compassion or empathy or even reason, and he worked for the Supreme Priest. Basically, he was everything I didn't need in my life right now, even if he could turn into a grotesque and fly at night.
What else should I remember? I asked, hushed. More horrible stuff?
No.
And the trials. Is that what this is?
No. You'll need to know who you are before you start them. Mismatch remembers you. He doesn't know it yet. I asked him to bring you to me, and he did. If he didn't feel the connection between you, he would have denied me.
Ugh. I was feeling unsettled, to say the least. I yearned to talk to Heracles, to ask him to tell me his version of events the night I fell from the sky, to understand how he could kill my parents, then raise me as his own. This kind of betrayal was too deep for me to feel anything but profound confusion. I didn't remember my parents, but that didn't mean I was able to brush off their deaths. He had hidden away his entire past from me, and I never bothered to ask him too much about it out of respect for the man I loved. Was this wrong? Should I have insisted instead of blindly trusted him?
These trials. What is the purpose? I asked, puzzled.
The gods created the trials to challenge you, so you understood how to serve them. I fear men will choose trials to further their goals as well.
I need to get this over with, I said. I need to talk to Heracles.
If you are ready.
Namazini pointed to another door I suspected didn't lead where I thought it should. I had no idea what I should have been ready for. Namazini went back to playing with her toys, and I stood.
Thank you.
I went to the door and stared at it, stilling my emotions to handle whatever came next.
I do know you can't kill him, she called after me.
Kill who?
The opponent the Supreme Priest chose to face you.
So next is a battle.
I faced the door. I could deal with a battle better than I could learning I knew even less about the world and those in it than I thought. I'm not afraid. I can handle a battle. Namazini said nothing. With a deep breath, I opened the door and stepped into the courtyard on the CISA compound. It was empty, aside from the ribbons that flowed around everything. Quiet and late afternoon, with lights from the recessed corners of buildings illuminating the shaded area around me.
Shit.
Until I turned, I could assume I wasn't being matched up against the one man who could not only beat me,
but who could do so very, very quickly. Before I had a chance to convince him not to kill the person who brought him to life.
Grotesques lining the rooftop of a temple. I was on a class tour of the temple when teen boys began to torment one of the stone monsters. I stopped them, tried to fix the creature, and in doing so, brought it to life.
The memories were trickling in. With a start, I realized I wasn't wearing the red cord. The world didn't quake, and I focused for a long moment on the ribbons. I could manipulate them, allegedly, yet had no idea what each color meant or how to maneuver them without making the entire world crash down around me. Nemazenie's warning about being able to create or destroy out of the gate concerned me. How on earth had I, as a 6-year-old, managed to learn to use this power safely? I felt him near me. This time, the uncanny sensation was stronger. I hadn't yet recovered from the revelations or the trek through my mind to release my memories. The Supreme Priest has ordered your trial to be as such. You will face me in a battle here and now. If you fail to defeat me, you will swear a blood and life oath to serve him and obey him without question.
Can we, talk about this first? I asked.
Coldness pierced me. I drew a breath and faced Adonis. He was dressed in his black uniform, cool gaze on me, panther body tensed and ready for a fight. He carried 2 knives and appeared serious about using them. Except I wasn't seeing him as he was now, but as he had been. The weeping man bleeding out on the floor of my kitchen. He nearly died to save me, and he had murdered several government men to protect me. What happened between the moment he fell from the sky and when he rediscovered me? Did any part of the man he had been remain?
You can't kill him.
Nemazenie wasn't telling me I'd fail. She was warning me I physically could not destroy something I had brought to life.
What if I win? I asked as the silence drew out.
Then you owe him nothing. It was simple and smart. The Supreme Priest managed to cut out the other members of the Triumvirate up front. I imagined he intended to use my powers for the reason Adonis claimed earlier, to expand his influence and control over the world. If I were truly what Nemazenie claimed, I could grant him this and help him rule the gods as well.
Quick question, I said, my heart starting to race. Do you remember me?
It was lame.
Choose your weapon.
He pointed with the tip of 1 knife towards the windows of the 2nd floor overlooking the courtyard. I watched his ribbons shift around him with each movement, fascinated by them. The Supreme Priest is watching on behalf of the gods.
Of course. I blew out a sigh. Adonis, I don't...
Weapon of choice. I studied him. Some part of him had known me, but it was buried under years of him being a different man. I went reluctantly to the display of weapons on a table. My hands were shaking as I picked up 1 knife and tested its weight.
You are not so eager for your trial, he observed.
No, I'm not. You had some sense knocked into you since we last spoke this morning.
Not sense, knowledge.
I set the knife down and picked up another. No part of me was involved in choosing a weapon. I was wishing instead that I'd never gone in to open my memories. Not that I wanted to kill Adonis or anyone, but knowing I couldn't, with his pain and effort to save me still fresh, with confirmation that we truly were connected, I was worried. Terrified, even, because all that emotion meant I wasn't going to be able to pull the trigger if I had the chance. Not in self-defense. Not out of anger for what he'd done to Heracles, the forest, my adopted family. Heracles had trained me to contain my emotions when it came to survival, and I wasn't able to do that now that I knew the history between Adonis and me.
Seeing him for the first time in the backyard, when he came to visit the night after I'd woken him. the fleecy softness of his wings, his scent, how he gently wrapped me in his wings.
Oh, gods, that was where I first smelled him. It was why he was familiar to me, even in the human form I never saw as a child. How could I defeat him when I didn't think I'd have the heart to try?
There's another way to win. Help me remind him who he is.
The voice of the goddess I just met was almost too soft to hear.
You're stalling, he said.
Blinking, I shifted towards the next set of weapons, short swords. Images from the night he tried to save me, when he picked me up gently from the treehouse and hovered off the ground, flew through my mind.
I love you, Mismatch.
Mismatch. It was the name I gave him when I was a child. Shivering, my hand dropped from the table. I remember how soft they were, I said. Silence. For a moment, I didn't think he had heard.
Softer than velvet,
blacker than night, and wider than the courtyard.
What are you talking about?
A tight, hushed note was in his voice. I heard him pad closer, intensed, uncertain if he believed in fair fights or just winning, and what he'd do since he knew the stakes.
Your wings.
His breath caught,